And welcome. It's great to see this room full of people, concerned citizens. My name is Terry Snyder, and I am the AARP Alaska State President. Welcome to the forum for House District 11. AARP is the sponsor of tonight's event. AARP is a nonprofit, nonpartisan member organization that does not have a PAC or a political action committee. We do not support or oppose candidates for public office, nor do we contribute money to political parties or campaigns. Instead, AARP encourages you to learn about the candidates. And on August 16th, next Tuesday, vote for the candidate of your choice. So tonight, you will have an opportunity to ask the candidates questions. Fill out this card and hold it up when you're done, and one of our volunteers will collect it and give it to the moderator. Now, I would like to introduce our moderator for this evening. It is my pleasure to welcome consultant from Sandbox Solutions, Chaz St. George.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Terry. I appreciate that. What a great crowd. I'm really excited about the questions you're already submitting. I've been taking a look at them, and great questions. Some of them are of the same thread, so if we don't ask your question verbatim, it's probably mixed in with a similar question, okay? I'd like to, at this time, introduce our candidates, if at all possible. And we have Bert Verrill. We also have Delana Johnson and Richard Best. And that is the order they'll go in here shortly when they make their opening statements. So just to give you a heads up there. To review the rules of the road, first off, for every event, the candidates, you'll have 2 minutes for your opening statement and 1 minute for a closing statement. You'll also have a 1 minute to answer each question. Chris Herman, Chris? Raise it really high so that if somebody sees somebody hitting something and a buzzer goes on or anything, it's Chris, okay? So there we go. Chris is our timer. He'll put up a yellow sign when you have 10 seconds left. It looks just like that. Okay, and then the after 10 seconds, you're gonna get another one. That one is basically stop. And then you get to hear the bell. Right? There we go. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for writing down your questions. Keep those questions coming. That's very important. At this time, I would like to invite Bert Verrill to start things off. Bert?
How did I get here? My name is Bert Verrill. I was born in Palmer. Half of my family got off the train in 1935, and the other half was here to greet them. I see a lot of familiar faces in the room. That makes us a little bit more comfortable. My wife and I talked about getting into politics for quite some time. We decided I didn't really have the demeanor for it because I don't like people to not like me. And I don't think you can be in politics and not have half the people upset at you at some point. But as the deadline approached and I saw no one who was non-affiliated or not a Republican signing up, I let the frustration that I have felt the last few years with our legislature go ahead and guide me. And so I went down and signed up as a independent. I was born a little Republican, big business Republican. I thought I'd go to work for 40 years and get my gold watch in my retirement. But things started to change in the 80s, and retirement started going away, and gold watches were replaced by plastic. And then finally, I switched from my party in about 4 years ago when the middle class was attacked in Wisconsin by Governor Walker. So I'm trying to reform my conservative values, or not my values, but the beliefs that I'd held and grown up with fighting for the middle class. I know in this race I'll be branded a Democrat because I'm not an R, but I've never been a Democrat, and I think the Democratic Party was really surprised to see somebody else had signed up. And so I look forward to serving you. I'll be on the general election ballot. You will not see me on the primary. And don't remember the day before election day, it's the first day your taxes are due.
Well, hello. I'm Delana Johnson, and I'm running for House District 11, as many of you know. Several of you, I've been at your door. But and I grew up in Talkeetna. I'm the last of a family of 12. And what that means is my father was 57 years old when I was born. So by the time I was 7 years old or 8 years old, I already had a senior citizen for a parent. And it also means that as I got older, and they got older, I ended up being the primary care person for my parents. And that was not a chore, it was a privilege, but it did become very clear to me, and is very clear to me. My mom passed away in 2000 after about 15 years of extended on and off care and in and out of the hospital. I know what it means to have to deal with an aging parent. I know what it means to have to make it on a bare subsistence income. I watched my parents work through, you know, a number of issues that are still current and we're facing today. So to me, I'm so pleased to be here, and I do hope as we move forward with Alaska, with our budget cuts, that we remember that we have to do it with precision and not with this, and really be clear on when we do cut the budget, what that's going to mean, that we don't have the unintended consequences that put people out on the street that can least afford to be have their circumstances change. So it's a pleasure to be here tonight, and I'm always pleased to be at the Palmer Senior Center. Thank you.
Richard, you're up.
First off, I'd like to say thank you for having us here. This is always kind of one of the uncomfortable parts, is getting up there and talking about yourself. My name is Richard Best, born and raised in Alaska. And I've raised my family here with my wife. I have two daughters here in Palmer, and they had just recently graduated from high school. My wife and I, we just were able to celebrate our 20th wedding anniversary last night. I'm still kind of in the afterglow of looking back over my 20 years with my wife and where we have come so far. Growing up on the Kenai Peninsula, I was raised in a blue-collar family down in the gravel pits and construction industry. Went to school and came back to Alaska and decided to get into the oil and gas business because when I went to school, it was more for architectural design. And we all know that in the late 80s, there wasn't many homes being built. We all felt the shake of the oil and gas industry and how that economy rippled through our state. Coming back to Alaska, I was able to get into an industry when it was starting to rebuild itself, redefine how they were doing business. Now, one of the reasons why that I've gotten into running for this seat is because we are at that stage right now within the state of trying to redefine ourselves, because we are low on economic funds to be able to generate the government that we have gotten accustomed to. It's not necessarily what we needed, but it's what we've gotten accustomed to. Now we're going to have to redefine what it is that we feel government services should be providing. We also need to be able to open up the doors for business to go forward and to bring ourselves up together. And I'd just like to ask for your vote when it comes to voting on the 16th, or if you're voting early, please vote Best.
Thank you very much. We have three questions that are already prepared for the candidates before we entertain questions from you who are all in the room. And again, thank you very much for sending those questions forward. The first question is a fairly simple one. Since, Bert, you went first, Delana, you're next. And so I just want to ask this simple question. What solutions do you bring to the table to help Alaska's fiscal crisis?
Well, one thing that I bring to the table is being mayor of Palmer for 6 years. I know what it's like to balance a budget. I know what it's like to have to say no. I know what it's like to have to pull back from services that have been implemented. But I've also ran a business. I bring my education. I have a degree in mathematics. But mostly, I bring a deep roots here in the valley. I've raised my family here, so I understand, and I've educated my kids here, so I know what it means to have to find educational options. I know what it's like to take care of my parents and be involved with healthcare ongoing there. So I understand what healthcare options are available and how difficult it can be to find an internist or find a doctor if you're on Medicare. So what I bring to the table is a deep sense and understanding of this area and from a variety of perspectives.
Thank you very much. You're next, Richard, with the same question. Would you like for me to repeat it, or everybody okay with it?
I'm good with it.
Okay, good.
So part of my introduction I didn't explain. I've got 30 years in the construction engineering industry. So with that, large scale projects. You're talking from the most recent field to go online, Alpine, you know, was of the larger of the three. That was a huge project. Being able to come in under budget, on time, and look at things differently and try to revamp the way that Alaska is going about the industry is something I'm very attuned to. Also, I have 11 years on Palmer City Council where I have cut personnel and found ways that we could find efficiencies within government. You know, that's very important as we look towards the situation we have right now in the state.
And finally, Bert.
I've researched my opponents and we're all saying the same thing. We're gonna cut and we're gonna be efficient. The truth is we don't have the resources we used to have. We either have to replace those resources. Replace resources is code for tax. We have to either tax ourselves, tax tourists, tax income. Efficiencies of government, I'll lead by example. When I get to Juneau, I will ask that our staffing in the legislature be cut by 50%. All wages are frozen. I'll extend that same courtesy to the governor's office, and I'll ask that the commissions that turn in their budgets will live by the same rules we do. I'm not going to cut everywhere by attrition in those other commissions, but everybody's going to hurt a little bit. I think we're in a hunker down period, and this valley is ripe with government entities, so we have to be careful.
All right, thank you very much. Our candidates, the next question is another fairly simple one. What will you do to strengthen the safety net for Alaska's seniors? And I think this crowd might really enjoy the answers. So let's start with this time. We're going to start off with Richard, I believe.
Thank you. When you're talking safety net, let's talk about like senior benefits program. You know, that was actually in the Governor Walker's budget to cut. That is something that it failed in the legislature, and we were able to secure that again, and that's going to be coming up it was only for a 2-year period, so that's going to be up there. So that's actually something I'm interested in extending. We have to be very careful when we are making cuts as to the ripple effect on things.
I do believe that this next look, I need to make sure and get this right here. So Richard went first, you're next. Okay. Thank you so much. I just want to make sure and track myself here because I get put in time out if I go out of line.
Right.
So, okay.
I get to play golf with a bunch of AARP members and senior citizen members, and I sit and I listen to them and they impart their wisdom on me. Luckily, the safety net of senior benefits was spared. It had been cut down to $47 for the lowest people, and their qualifying number, they got bumped back up to 76, but it's still down from 100. But you all understand that unless we increase the income, the money is just not there. And everybody is, nobody's gonna be able to say, yeah, we need to cut, but don't cut my program. There's gonna be a little shared pain, unfortunately. That's the truth. And you can't sugarcoat it. Everybody's gonna do the best they can. I tried to learn a little bit about the budget, but oh my goodness, it's like an onion. And it does make you cry as you peel away the layers. But I counted 7 separate budgets when I tried to get a little knowledge on this. So simplification would be nice.
All right, the next question, Bert, you might want to hang on to that. You're next. So now I'm in timeout.
Yeah.
Okay, Delana. I wish I could give you more seconds, but I can't. Okay, go ahead.
Is that better? I have the opportunity to talk to a number of seniors, and I ask, what is the number one problem out there? But we could talk about housing, and we could talk about those things, but what can we do to strengthen the safety net? Well, what we can do is we really need to look at Medicaid and Medicare and how it's applied, because what I'm hearing from the seniors that I've talked to, that you can't even find a doctor that will take on a Medicare patient. And that's a system that it's not an entitlement, it's something people have paid into. And now you can't even use it to get your health care. So as we expand Medicaid and we evaluate our health care system in Alaska, we need to be looking at not just the programs, but how we're going to make it so that monies can be used that are for Medicare.
Thank you, Delana. This next question has to do with Senate Bill 1. Last legislative session, Senate Bill 1, a smoke-free workplace bill, and an AARP Alaska legislative priority passed the Senate, but failed to be heard in the bill's final committee of referral in the House. There's every indication the same bill will be introduced this session. Would you support a bill that would protect seniors from secondhand smoke? And please limit your answers to either yes or no. So we're going to start out this time with Bert.
Yes.
Delana, you're next.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, that was short. We're gonna move on to your questions now, okay? I'd like to start out with a question that, was one of the first ones up here. So we are going to start the rotation with Delana, and then go to, I believe, Richard, and then to Bert. So what is the first thing but new revenue?
We can maybe bring in taxes, which is somebody, it's kind of leftover revenue from someone else, or we take from someone else. I do think that in the middle of bringing back this next budget, there needs to be an evaluation of the assets that the state of Alaska has. So not just taxes, but if we're going to look at potentially selling more state lands, how we can work with the mineral rights that we have. Is there departments that have, and there's departments that have large capital assets. Do some of those need to be sold off? There are things that the state of Alaska owns that we may sell to bring in some revenue that we could add to our permanent fund. And then as we get the interest from that, it would go up instead of drawing down from our savings account. That's just one we could keep going.
I have to turn my mic on now. So the same question.
To just go in there and generate revenue, I actually have to agree with my colleague. Government does not do that. What we can do to encourage revenue is to unleash the private sector. And by that, you know, when you start talking about onerous regulations that are out there, you know, a certificate of need, I think that's something that has to be really discussed about whether or not that is holding prices artificially up in the medical industry, or is it actually prohibiting services like Medicaid to exist in their area? Because, you know, you hear some arguments that if certificate of need is done away with, that Medicaid will have some problems with that. So that's one way that we can generate cost savings, which in turn is generating a little bit of income.
Thank you very much.
I don't want to sound like the tax hawk, because I've already mentioned taxes twice, and you guys are going to think that I'm going to have my hand out when you leave the room, and that's not true. I want to get a balanced, fair, I guess it's generating income or saving money, but somewhere right in the middle of what it costs to produce oil and sell oil. We need to evaluate that to make sure we're getting the most bang for our buck. We don't need to be at the top of the scope or at the bottom. We need to be somewhere in the middle, and I want to make sure that that happens. Save money, a hiring freeze, a pay freeze, a travel freeze. We are really going to be in some tight situations, and everybody's going to pull a little bit, get a little skin in the game. Maybe we could sell water to California, but that's another one of those grandiose schemes that it seems like right now we're chasing four or five schemes at once, and $1 billion has been spent, and not one shovel of dirt has been turned over. So I'd like to start with saving money.
Thank you. This next question has to do with education, and this time starting out will be Richard, followed by Bert, and then by Delana. The question is, what reductions are you proposing for grades K through 12?
Well, currently I'm not proposing any cuts right now. What I'd like to do is to continue to enforce the parental right to be able to choose different forms of education, where we've got homeschooled, you got charter schools. You know, those are things that I would like to encourage, but not necessarily talking about any specific cuts.
Thank you.
Any efficiencies that do not affect the number of teachers in the classroom or the number of students that they have to teach, I would be in favor of that. I'd like to start administratively. Where are we at in relationship to other places? Let's look at admin first. And it seems like whenever education reductions are brought up, the first thing that they scare you with is we're going to cut theater, we're going to cut band, we're going to cut football and basketball. Well, I don't know, we can't micromanage how school districts do their work, but inefficiencies in administration would be my starting point.
Well, I learn a lot by talking to folks at the door. And I was talking about some statistics that I had read that said that for every one person in Alaska, for every three people in Alaska, we have one state employee. And that person at the door said, now, wait a minute, I don't like that statistic, and that's not really right. Because you're talking about teachers, and if you're talking about teachers and those being employees of the state is different than really having a state employee, because teachers are not hired by the state, they're hired by their local boroughs. As Matsu School District, they're the ones that hire the school teachers, they're the ones that fund the schools, and so when it comes to state education, it's going to have to come from our local school districts. There's going to be educational issues that are way different, and this I understand this from being Conference of Mayors Chair and knowing the mayors throughout Alaska. The education issues are very, very different if you're in somewhere like Anituvik Pass than if you're in Palmer, Alaska. So I want to see the solutions come back from local government first, and then begin to slim down the budget on education.
Thank you. This next question has to do with resources again and with potential revenue for the state of Alaska. We cannot control the price of oil or natural gas. The volatility in price has landed us in our current severe budget shortfall. What strategies will you pursue to diversify our economy? Do you simply take a position of hoping that the price of oil will go up? So we start out with you again.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Can you repeat that question? I kind of missed.
Okay. It's pretty long-winded, but that sometimes happens when you're the moderator. We cannot control the price of oil or natural gas. The volatility in the price has landed us in this current severe budget shortfall. What strategies will you pursue to diversify our economy, or are you simply hoping the price of oil will go up? And that'll start out, we're going to start out with, Bert.
It was easy to be a legislator when billions of dollars were coming in, and I can see why a lot of the people have left right now and gone somewhere else. All of us agree that we need to make state government as efficient as possible. The oil companies used to provide about 50% of the income the state used, and federal government about 25%. About 20% from everywhere else, from investments from the permanent fund, and about 5% from everything else. That's as diverse as we go. Being asked to pay our own way, that's one option. Increase in access to state and federal lands, that might be another option. Anything's on the table. Tourism, obviously. Can the tourists help us pay for our state? They come and visit it. They love it. It's beautiful. And so maybe they could help pay for it.
Thank you. Up next is Delana.
Well, hope isn't a plan. But we all have seen a lot of wishful thinking. If you take a look at the state budget, this isn't just something where you can find a few efficiencies and make the budget balance. We're talking about if you went a straight across the board cut in the budget to balance it, even if you brought the permanent fund down to $500, you're talking about a 30% across the board cut in the budget to balance it with no taxes. I just want to make that statement. On the diversification of the economy, well, we need to define what we're going to do in a post-oil economy, and that's what Governor Hammond tried to do with permanent fund, was to take the volatility out of the state by putting into the permanent fund and then having that revenue be thrown off so we could balance it out. And that's what we've seen other countries try to do, and tried to be done. I got to expand on that, but I won't. I'll let it move on.
All right. Thank you very much, Selena.
Diversification of our economy. So we're talking, we are a mineral and resource rich state. So we're going to have to get into more hard rock mining, gold mining, copper mining, you know, those kind of things. Things that can be done with reason and thought. Those are things that we're going to have to get into a little bit more. We're going to have to open our state up a little bit if we're going to build our way out of this situation that we're in the middle of. We can't sit there and talk about constantly taxing things over and over again. We can only cut up the same pie into so many pieces. We're going to have to grow that pie if we're going to be able to get our way out of this.
Thank you. This next is a two-part question, and it's yes or no on both. So we're going to start out with... we're going to start out this time with Richard. You ready? These are two specific yes or no questions. The first one, do you support the diversion of the permanent fund dividend from the people to the government? The second question, go ahead.
No.
Okay, good. We'll just do it that way. That works. The second question is, do you support continuing to pay more in oil tax credits then we'll receive an oil production tax?
Well, that is a little bit of a tricky question. It's not really a yes or no answer. I would actually ask to have that reread again because of how difficult it is. Because you're talking about something that is earned and agreed upon.
Right. So that's your answer. right?
Well, to be fair to the others, mm-hmm. you did say it had to be yes or no.
Right.
So if you can read it again, I will try my best to give you a yes or no.
Okay. Thank you very much. Up next is Bert. Sorry, I wasn't... Am I missing something?
Yeah, read him the second question again.
You want me to read it to you? I'm sorry.
Please.
I did not hear... I was... Okay. Are you ready? Do you support continuing to pay more in oil tax credits than we receive in oil tax production, or oil production tax, excuse me?
With how that question reads, and I would say no.
Okay. I'm glad we got through this. I feel so much better. Okay, here we go.
No and no.
No and no. There we go.
Ditto.
Okay, we're through with that question. We can move on now. The next person up is going to be, let me see, it's going to be Bert. And the first question is, and this question is, okay, here we go. I just had it here. Well, that was not the question. So we have over 1 million people visiting Alaska in cruise ships. Do you support a seasonal sales tax, say between the months of June and September, or May and October?
As part of a wide-ranging revenue-producing plan, yes, I do.
Okay.
Oh, was that a yes or a no?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Up next, Delana.
Do I get more than one word?
You get more than one word.
Okay, good. a sales tax may be where we end up with as a tax, but as the president of the Conference of Mayors and knowing about all the small towns that we have around the state, I think implementing a sales tax and the administration of such and tracking all the sales is going to be difficult. I think we're going to have to look closely at what that means to be have to put in place before we implement a sales tax of any kind. So in general, if we had to go to a tax, I would go to a sales tax, because it's not a working tax, it's a consumption tax. But so in general, I would say yes, but I think there's some difficulties with it.
Thank you.
There again, a yes or no on a very deep question. Fundamentally, I would say no, but I get the gist of what they're trying to do, consumption tax on the folks that are coming from out of state. So I will stick with the no on that answer.
All right, thank you very much. Next up, we have, you're right in the queue again, so you're up next. So this is an education question. It's an education funding question. And it reads like this: the MATSU has the largest class sizes in the state. How will you support education to keep the class sizes from growing even larger?
Well, to read through that question, it just sounds like a funding formula kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But there again, let's go back into the different types of education that are available and we need to continue to support. Distance learning, at home with folks teaching their children at home, and we have a charter schools. So I guess that's where my answer would lie, that those are the situations that need to still be supported so that we can save the dollar of the large infrastructure schools.
Okay, Bert?
Whatever we call it, this phase of this period of less revenue, austerity, cut back, trim the fat, we can't let it get any worse than it is. The education pie is only so big, the pie that Richard talked about. I don't think it's the time to diversify the pie. Let's keep the pie the way it is. I would like to see a freeze I mean, if everybody has to kick in, everybody has to get a little skin in the game, maybe raises don't come for a couple of years. Just whatever we can do to keep the customer, in this case, the student or the parents of the student, getting the most bang for their buck by not having 40 kids in a school, in a classroom, that's what we need to do.
Talena?
I'll definitely say that there are big rooms full of kids in Palmer. A friend of mine has me come in and speak to all the second grade classes here in Palmer every year, and I'm exhausted after 3 hours. I don't know how the teachers make it all day, every day. But it's easy to say this, but I would really like to see administrative overhead going into the classroom instead of make the classroom the priority and make the administration follow from that. The next piece I would like to see is the borough needs to take this up, is how much of the tax rate that the borough takes in are they going to put towards education? Because really, these kind of solutions, they shouldn't be a top-down state solution. These need to come from the bottom and in the classroom, from the teachers, through the borough, and let's make that it clear how the state's involvement in education should be. But number one, it comes from the bottom up and with local government and how that's going to be applied.
Thank you, Delana. This next question has to do with something that's very near and dear to a lot of us in our community, and that's trails. Where do you stand on trails in Alaska? In terms of use of trails, in terms of not just stand on them, but actually stand on
walk to the end of them and come
right.
back.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
I'm all for that. I think the borough, speaking locally, the borough has done a great job in this trail system that it has. Getting outdoors and enjoying Alaska is a beautiful thing. But it probably done at the local level. That might be a thing if there has been such a thing. You know, remember, I haven't been down there, so I don't know if there is such a thing as state trail funding. I don't know that there is. That seems like something your legislature would put in to try to get done. But we might be in a nonprofit group building trail situation for a while, or the National Guard practicing skills with their equipment like they used to when I was a kid to build ball fields and trails. So there are other options to keep things like this going that doesn't necessarily have to be state funded.
Is it? You sure? You guys want to go that way? Let's do it then. Delana? Okay, let's go.
Well, first of all, I'm really quite pleased to be endorsed by Scott Lapine, who is the Trails and Access Alliance president. And I had a good conversation with him about trails and access. But I think one thing that we have to remember is trails in Alaska isn't about just taking a Sunday walk. A trail in Alaska is RS-2477 mining access trails. It's also your access across native lands to get to state lands. All those things need to be kept at the forefront of our discussion, particularly as I unfortunately have my share of dealing with what I consider, I hate to say federal overreach, but we have a lot of federal lands in Alaska. So those trails, access, all very important. It's a huge issue, has many facets to it, and to protect our lands and protect our access for hunting, fishing, mining, and other is of maximum importance.
Richard.
Thank you. Public access to state lands is imperative. Folks often ask, how did you get involved in politics? Well, just being a citizen, as we all are, development was going in behind my neighborhood that was going to get rid of a public use trail that was behind me. And I found out through a little reading that this was not a protected trail. It was a recognized trail in a 1977 trails plan for the Mat-Su Borough, but the Crevice Moraine trail system, and this is tied into the Milky Power Line Trail, which is where I live, and found out that it hadn't been protected. So I started kind of going around and reading about stuff and talking to my neighbors and engaging into local government about how do you get a trail protected. Well, next thing I know, I'm being asked to be on a planning and zoning commission, and then it's all gone downhill from here.
Thank you very much. That was a really good answer. This next question, we'll start out with Delana, and it's about the fiscal crisis. How would you rate our current legislature's effectiveness in dealing with our fiscal crisis, and what would you do differently?
Well, first of all, and I've been asked this question before, I'm not really into giving grades to the legislature and the governor at this point. I was because I think there's plenty to go around for everyone that's been in Juneau, including administration. So it's easy to say it's a huge problem that has to be dealt with. Anyway, my big concern, what I would have done different is, first of all, there's a crisis of leadership in Juneau. No one stood up and even said had bad ideas in the legislature. No one stuck their head up above the crowd. It's more just been hiding from the problem. That's one thing that I think is an issue. The other one is the communication. I mean, if we don't develop a common vision for our problem in a post-oil economy in Alaska, then we're sunk. We can't get to the finish line if we can't get to know where we're going. So the governor and the legislature need to figure out a way so they can agree on what that vision is and then try to get there. And it's going to take leadership, vision, and discussion to make that happen.
Thank you. Up next is Richard.
Thanks, Bert. So as a grade, I would say that the legislature, I would give them probably a B minus. B minus, when we're working with a governor who has been, in many people's eyes, very stubborn and wanting it a certain way, we have to be able to engage in a conversation and find a way that Alaska can come through this. Now, was that necessarily the legislature's problem? It was their problem. Was it their fault? That I can't speak to. You're talking about 60 folks that have to deal with the governor's office and try to work through this. I think it's something that everybody involved should take a lump on it, and we're going to have to work through this thing. I hope to engage in many conversations with the governor. I respect the man, but I don't agree with many of his policies and moves that he's gone through so far.
I want Richard to grade my papers. That's the reason I got off the couch, folks. The national paralysis that we saw with a Congress that didn't get along with our president and just decided to shut down and wait him out, it came to our own house. The 29th legislature had two full sessions and five special sessions. And nobody used any of the four plans submitted, the governor's plan, the Rasmussen plan, Senator McGuire had a plan, Ron Duncan from GCI had a plan. There were plans that weren't acted on. And they just shut down and decided to wait the governor out. And that's what prompted me to action. And so I want to go down there and just develop a new attitude. The way that it's always been done is not good enough. And so I hope that there's a bunch of fresh faces just like me that are prepared to do the same thing.
Thank you very much. This next question, I think we're good on time still, right? We can roll through a bunch more questions. This next question is, we're going to start out with, I believe we're starting out with you. Richard, you ready? Okay. Now, this is titled, I Want to Know More About Partisan Divide. And it is a two-part question. Will you join the majority caucus if the procedural budget vote rule remains in place?
We're just going to do one part at a time?
I think we're going to do it one part at a time.
Okay. The question that you're asking is very particular, because if you decide not to join the caucus, then are you doing a disservice to your constituents to not be able to have a seat at different levels within the process?
Right.
The question, I would join the majority caucus to represent my constituents in their best interest. Now, in the past, we have seen legislators whom I respect stand a firm ground on that they weren't going to join or speak out against the caucus. They did speak out against the caucus and were stripped of many of their positions. And you know, you could see that you could agree with many of the positions that was stated, but at what disservice to their constituents. And so that would actually be a very weighted decision that it's difficult to answer at this time, but I would probably join the caucus.
So the second question real quickly is this: if no, would you be in favor of a bipartisan working group in the House?
Now you're talking about what's commonly referred to as the muskox. And that is not something I am interested in you know, going into as to the rationale. Now, when we look at the body as it is elected, and if there is more of one flavor in the House versus the other, you know, those are discussions that are going to happen at that table then, and it will be interesting.
All right, thank you very much. Bert?
The new fresh faces in Juneau and I will form our own caucus, and there will be three, and we will mediate between the conservative caucus and the Democratic caucus and come to things that Alaskans, not just voters, but all Alaskans, can use. Was that both questions at the same time?
You got both at the same time. Thank you. All right. Delana, you're up.
The question was, would I join a majority caucus? And the answer is yes, I would, because the majority of the people in Alaska elected those majority, and I would stand with them. I also know that when you're involved with budget discussions, and things can go very odd in budget discussions, next thing you know, who knows what you're buying. If you're not in the caucus to discuss the budget, if you're not there at the table, you have no way of making sure that, and I'm not worried about an expanding budget at this point. I'm worried about the contracting budget and the contracting budget and how it's going to affect people right here directly where the services hit. So I think it's important to be part of the discussion.
All right. Thank you very much. That's a very difficult question, and I'm proud of all three of you as candidates for responding. And I think now this is an even more difficult question, but it's time for us to ask this. And we will start with, we're going to go back to the original rotation, which is going to be you, Bert. Who do you favor, the Beatles or the Stones?
Beatles.
All right. Delaney?
I can't get no satisfaction.
Nice. That was awesome. Thanks. It's all yours, Richard.
Stones.
I thought there'd be a debate over this at some level, but I guess not. Thank you so much for the levity. And at this point, we're getting ready to roll into our next, to our closing statements. But there have been a number of questions that really, you know, that are interesting, and many of them kind of resonated the same. There are two that stood out, and I'd like to ask that one first. And we're going to go back to the next rotation, which would be you, Richard. Do you think the University of Alaska colleges should allow guns on campus?
Absolutely.
All right. Up next would be you, Bert.
Responsible gun owners should never be denied the right to have a firearm.
All right, Delana.
Well, I didn't come to my answer quite as quickly because I have a sophomore at the college, but I asked a number of state troopers what they thought, and every single one of them said yes. So, yes, I do.
All right. This next one has to do with trails again, but it's a different kind of question. And we're going to start out with you, Bert. What about bike and walking trails being tied to highway construction spending? What are your thoughts about that? Where do you stand?
Right off the top of my head, highway construction projects are paid for with gasoline tax. And I don't think there's a gasoline tax on bicycles. I understand there's a huge project extending the Butte bike path, which I love, my wife loves, all the way out to Kinnick Road. I work at a utility that's been tasked with moving wires, cables, underground cables, above ground cables, to make room for this bike path, and it has cost literally millions of dollars to move this these facilities. So in our decreasing funds for highway projects, I think we should stick to highway projects.
Thank you. Delana?
I'm sorry, I didn't exactly hear all that.
All right, let me find it again. Hold on just a sec. I got a bunch of them up here. You got me on this one. So basically what the question is what is your stance on tying federal dollars to trails, to bike trails and to walking trails? Are you in favor of it, opposed to it?
Well, my experience with federal money is that the feds are the ones that tie things together like that. I'm in favor of any kind of opening up any kind of road and access any way you can get it. And would I reject the monies for a road if a bike path didn't come with it? No, I don't think so.
All right. Richard?
I get the gist of why they're added. It's about transportation. And if you can put somebody in a bicycle, there's more than likely that you're going to be taking a vehicle off the road in that situation. To tie the money to where it's an obligation to have a bike path in some situations is unnecessary. But I am a fan of bike paths and trails. And you often see folks that are potentially in mechanical wheelchairs going down a lot of these. So it is truly about access. But we might need to kind of pare some things back.
Okay, thank you very much. Delana, you're going to fill this first question here. We have two entities that are submitting certificates of need for extended care facilities in our borough right now. It's sort of a double-edged sword in that there is a need. However, it will considerably impact the cost of Medicaid. So what is your opinion on the subject?
This one is near and dear to me. I'm the extended care provider in my family, for those of my family that still live in Talkeetna and have to have a place after they get out of the hospital. So there's definitely a need out there for people to have a place to go after they get out of the hospital. But as we look at Medicare, Medicaid, and how we're going to reimburse the folks that have these facilities, we also have to remember that they're probably going to be a very high rate of reimbursement compared to the Pioneer Home. So if we're going to shut down Pioneer Homes and then establish a certificate need to double the cost, then that needs to be looked at. But in general, I don't think there's any question that we need facilities for people to have an alternative or have a place to go once they get out of an acute care facility like the hospital. I spent a long time talking to the administrator of the hospital the other day, and there's we don't have a place for folks to go, but we do have to consider our Pioneer home as well.
I don't necessarily know that that was answered. Could we get that question again, just for my own clarity?
Sure, and I have it right here in front of me. We have two entities submitting certificates of need right now for extended care facilities in our borough. It's a double-edged sword in that there is a need. However, it will considerably impact the cost of Medicaid. What is your opinion on the subject?
On a certificate of need or that particular situation?
Certificate of need. The fact that we have two competing entities.
Correct. Well, if we just go by the discussion of certificate of need, you know, this is something that I believe it hinders private investment and private companies coming in and compete, and that's what we're holding back. We're stifling competition, and that's what I had actually kind of mentioned something about this earlier, was that we do need to be wary of how removing some language might adversely affect different entities. So as it pertains to Medicaid and how that their funding structures and their payout is going to be affected, we have to take that in consideration. But in general, I am not a fan of certificate of needs. I think that's a program that is archaic, and it's not it's helping to hold up high cost of medical services.
I'm a little disappointed to hear about the high cost, because when I heard the pitch for this, it was that this was going to reduce costs because skilled nursing facilities were going to take people out of the hospital, thereby reducing costs. So I'm a little surprised and disappointed about the increased cost of Medicaid. But this touches on something that we haven't talked about that I think is one of the most important things facing us, and that's the rising health care costs. We need to get a hold on the rising health care costs. It's ridiculous to pay the prices that we're paying for seemingly simple things. And I don't know how it can be done. It has to be done. If we can't wait for the federal government to do it, maybe there's something we can do on a state level.
All right. Thank you very much. At this time, we would like to invite each candidate to make closing statements. Again, we drew straws before, and for some reason, Bert got A twice. He's number one twice in this rotation here. And so Bert will start off, followed by Richard and then Delana. So Bert?
I hope that, like me, somewhere in the last few years, you have said, what is going on? We need to do better than this. I'm not going to return those people to work, whether it be a building fiasco in Anchorage or travel fiascos all over the world, or not doing your job in the seven sessions you had to do your job, whatever it was. If you said, you know what, I'm just not going to do the same thing over again and expect a different result. This is not new. I went back and reviewed some running KAKM film from the last election in this district, and the argument for the Democratic candidate was the same thing. And so I want to point out that there's a difference between the Republican and the, wish I could just call it independent, but it's called non-affiliated, than an independent person that I want to go down and I want to work with everybody. I want to negotiate. I don't think bipartisanship is a bad word. I think that's how you govern. If you govern solely on, I have the most votes, therefore I win, that's not governing. That's just bullying.
Richard?
So in closing, I'd like to say thank you for having us here again. I'd like to say, as I look out across the room, there's many folks that I have worked with over the years as a citizen of Palmer, as a councilman, and on planning and zoning as well. My 11 years on Palmer City Council has been a humbling experience and an enriching experience. That's one of the things that is so great about our community, is that it is made up of the people that live here. My wife and I are very proud of this area that we have called home. The background of many of the folks that I call friends are very diverse, from teachers to oil field workers to grocery shop owners to owners of businesses downtown Palmer. And that is the community that we live in. I'm not just a box that is just going to go down there and vote a certain way. I'm going to carry your voice down to Juneau. So I hope for your vote. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to everybody, and I appreciate you being here tonight.
Well, I think it's funny that the person that's the non-party person is talking about party more than anyone else, but I am pleased to be here, and I come from a nonpartisan position as mayor of the city of Palmer, and it's been great to work across the lines. I don't think anyone talks about me as someone that has some, you know, I'm not in this camp and I'm not in that camp. I just kind of want to go camping. But we have to come to some solutions that mean finding the best thing for Alaska. The number one issue, I mean, we have the budget out there, but a big next issue we're going to be dealing with is healthcare. Healthcare is our biggest issue that we have before us to sort out in the Alaska budget. There's no question about that. A big issue that we have right here in Palmer is senior housing, veteran housing. These are things that we're going to have to deal with, and it's not going to be based on party. It's not going to be based on a number of things. It's going to be talking to people. It's going to be trying to figure out what our priorities as far as the budget is going to be, and I look forward to being able to continue to do the good work that I've done in Palmer and Juneau.
Thank you very much, and ladies and gentlemen, how about a round of applause for our three candidates? So that's it for this forum. We have another one coming up. Senate seat F will happen right here. We're going to take a 15-minute break, and then we'll get right back to it. Thanks again.